Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Inspire small business.
We can teach these barbarians a lesson in Western methods and efficiency that will put them to shame.
He tells it like it is.
I realize how difficult it's going to be in this godforsaken place where you can't find what you need. And there's the challenge.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
With all due respect, sir, I believe this is going to be our finest.
Welcome back. It's 34 After. Thanks very much for hanging around with me. Thanks for being part of my day. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. And you're going to be glad you did because Jerry Ripperger is with us, ladies and gentlemen. He's back. Jerry is Director of Consumer Health at Principal Financial Group. He's here to talk to us about something very important, and that's health savings accounts. Jerry, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Jim.
It's good to have you back.
Yeah, it's been a while. I look forward to this.
We're glad to have you back. Okay, let's go back and do a little bit of history and bring our folks forward. Ladies and gentlemen, several years ago, I don't know who the person was who proposed this and created it, but my hat's off to him or her, and maybe Jerry knows who this is. Something called a medical savings account was created, MSA. And do you remember who was the brainchild for MSA?
Yeah, they're known as Archer MSAs. They were attributed to Senator Archer.
Senator Archer, yeah, right. Okay, I'm glad you told me that. I'd forgotten about that. And so they were MSAs that were proposed to basically, it was really the first step to try to make healthcare portable for the average person, wasn't it?
Yeah, and the MSA itself was actually designed around self-employed individuals or very small businesses.
Exactly.
So it really was an idea to give them a tax advantage way to pay for health care, because by and large they had been disenfranchised from at least a tax advantage way of purchasing health care.
Exactly. And so good for Senator Archer, but the problem was that there were for some reason, I think Ted Kennedy was the guy who was the lead guy who didn't like this idea, because as you know, he only likes universal health care. He and some others put a lid on MSAs and said you can only have 750,000 of them. And therefore, Jerry, in my opinion, they never caught on because of that, because why would companies go out and go to a lot of trouble to design a product that they had a limit on how many they could sell?
Yeah, and that's exactly right, although the lid never came into play because we never had more than 400,000 taxpayers that actually subscribed to MSAs, and that really was due to the internal constraints within them. They were a great idea,
right?
And then they put a whole bunch of roadblocks up. And that's what HSAs removed, all those roadblocks.
And that happened with the I've forgotten the name of the act of 2004, as I remember. Was it December? It passed in December of 2003 or 2004? I forgot.
December 8th of 2003, President George W. Bush signed Medicare Prescription Drug Modernization Improvement Act, and that's what created HSAs.
And as expensive as that bill was, and as ugly as it may become, and a lot of people don't like it, it did do one thing very important. It gave life to an unlimited legs to life and legs to the HSA, which replaced the MSA.
Absolutely. I mean, in most regards, an HSA is just an MSA done right.
The health savings account. That's exactly right. And so I actually own HSAs myself, and my employees have HSAs. And I know a larger companies who have HSAs for their employees, and they make a lot of sense. But something happened recently. Well, I'll tell you what. Tell us how an HSA works, even though we've talked about it on the show before with you and with other folks. Tell us how it works, and then we'll talk about how the new HSA legislation helped it. Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. Probably the simplest way to describe an HSA is to draw a parallel between an individual retirement account. And in most regards, an HSA is really just an IRA for medical expenses, except it has a better tax status. The money goes in pre-tax, accumulates tax-free, and if it's used to pay for a qualified medical expense, it's never taxed.
Whereas an IRA is taxed on the other end?
Correct.
In the distribution?
Unless it's a Roth, and then it's taxed on the front end. So
right,
there's always someone to pay taxes to on an IRA.
But an HSA has tax advantages on both sides.
Correct.
Right, going in and coming out. All right, and so that's basically an HSA, and it works like a charm, folks. What you do is you buy a basically a catastrophic insurance policy that has, say, a $2,000 deductible, and you are self-insured up to $2,000. Once a year, you put in $2,000, let's just say. You put in $2,000. You can put in more than that in certain circumstances. But you put in $2,000 into your HSA investment account, and that is the money that you then use if you need to be self-insured to cover that $2,000 deductible. And that money is you get a tax break on that when you do that, don't you, on that $2,000?
Yeah, you don't pay any income tax on that. So it's great, particularly for owners of growing businesses.
Exactly.
To set the money aside.
And a new bill was passed in the Tax Relief and Health Care Act of last year. It went into effect in January 07, and that's what we're going to talk about when we come back. It actually added new life and legs to the HSA. Jerry Ripperger and I will be back after these messages. Stay with us.
How long has it been?
We're back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my websites are smallbusinessadvocate.com, which is the flagship. That's the almost 10-year-old website that you can find all the things that we do on the show. You can find all the different ways that you can listen to the show and take possession, fair use possession of any of the interviews that we have, thousands of them actually. And also, don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter. Check out our blog while you're there. We update that every weekday. And also, our new website, the Small Business Knowledge Base, AskJim.biz. We encourage you to check that out as well, because you're going to get answers to your small business questions instantaneously. It works like a search engine, but it's a knowledge base, meaning we have answers right there on the website that'll answer your questions. If you don't find the answer you want, we give you the opportunity to send us the question, and we'll answer it for you. Jerry Ripperger is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. He's Director of Consumer Health with Principal Financial Group. We're talking about healthcare policies and specifically HSAs. And, you know, Jerry, there's really the problem with regular healthcare plans for small business owners is even if we can afford it today, we don't know what it's going to be a year from now. And if we set it up for our employees, and we can somehow manage to afford insurance for our employees today, you know, a year from now, we might have to cancel it because we just can't afford it. We don't know where it's going. And HSAs really takes a lot of that volatility out of that, doesn't it?
Yeah, what it really does, and we really have to understand what insurance is and what it isn't. I mean, insurance is the transfer of a catastrophic risk. Through the managed care era, we really turned insurance into a prepayment plan, a very expensive prepayment plan. So with the health savings accounts and the corresponding high-deductible health plans, we once again have redefined that relationship back to being, this is something that transfers catastrophic risk, something if you have a serious accident or you get seriously ill, and lets you deal with those prepayment things, your routine visits, your prescription drugs, through the savings account feature.
You become more of a healthcare consumer and not so much as a healthcare patient.
Absolutely. I mean, all of a sudden.
And that's an attitude we all need to assume, isn't it?
Sure. I mean, look at every other retail space or purchasing space in the United States. Those that are the most competitive have the best prices.
Exactly.
So by getting people engaged in making those purchasing decisions, we'll create a more competitive environment, and that will help stabilize and slow the rise in costs over time.
You wouldn't think about buying a car or a can of peas without shopping around to make sure you're getting the best price. Why would you do healthcare any differently? And currently, you know, you don't have as many options with healthcare as you should. And hopefully, you know, to me, Jerry, HSAs is really the first big step towards making health insurance portable, market-driven, and making Americans more healthcare consumers and less just patients who are, you know, who have to take what they're given.
Right. I grew up in a small town in Iowa, and my father had a fairly simplistic way of looking at things. And he thought there were only two types of money in the world: my money and other people's money. And up until now, particularly through the managed care era, this has been about other people's money.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, we have to pay premiums, but once we pay premiums, we can get all the health care we want for $25 per visit. We've now redefined that back to being, this is about my money. And I know I spend my money a lot more carefully than I spend other people's money.
Exactly. Now, Jerry, the new act, the Tax Relief and Health Care Act, makes HSAs more attractive now. Tell us why, what some of the new elements are.
Great. Yeah, there were seven enhancements in the Tax Relief and Health Care Act of 2006 that applied to the health savings account. I'd like to call it the good, the bad, and the ugly, only because I like that term. But it's really the good, the bad, and the indifferent. So let's kind of go through some of these. Probably the biggest enhancement was the elimination of what was called the lesser than rule. Prior to January 1st of this year, your maximum HSA contribution was limited to the lesser of your deductible under your high deductible health plan or the statutory limit, which was set by the IRS each year.
Mm-hmm.
For example, in this year it's $2,850 for self and $5,650 for family.
Right.
Effective January 1st, they eliminated that lesser than rule. You now can put in the statutory limit regardless of what your deductible is.
So even if my deductible is $2,000, if I buy a policy, if I'm willing to pay for a policy that brings my deductible down to $1,000, I can still save, put into the investment part of the HSA up to $2,850 or $5,600, right?
Yes and no. You still are limited by your minimum requirements for your high deductible health plan. So, for example, for self, you have to have a deductible of at least $1,100 this year.
Okay, well, all right.
And for family, $2,200. But in your example, sure, you could buy a $2,200 family policy
and still put in
$5,650.
Mm-hmm.
Which all of a sudden really starts to help balance that this isn't just for this year's health care expenses. This is for current and future health care expenses.
Mm-hmm.
And starts allowing people the opportunity to accumulate.
Well, and it also gives people other choices.
Absolutely.
Because, I mean, it gives you the ability, the choice of ramping up, pulling your deductible down and ramping up on your savings. As you say, it gives you it makes you feel that you're doing more saving for the future, not just covering the present. Hold on
right.
to that thought. We're going to come back and cover the rest of these points that are very attractive for HSAs these days right after these messages. It's 10 till. I'm Jim Blassingame. Jerry Ripperger is our guest. He's with Principal Financial Group. Back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're visiting with our good friend Jerry Ripperger. He's with Principal Financial Group. He's Director of Consumer Health. Jerry, give us your website, please.
Oh, yes. You can reach our website at www.principal.com.
All right. And we've been talking about HSAs, and your company offers these products, don't you?
Yeah, we offer a full line of health savings account services, including investments, banking, online access, online tools, resources to help you get engaged in your health.
Principal.com, P-R-I-N-C-I-P-A-L, Principal, with an A-L, .com. Okay, we're talking about some of the adjustments that were made to HSAs. You were telling us about one of them. I like that, the new way that you can adjust your deductible different from your contribution to the savings portion of an HSA. And there's some other things that were changed January 1st, weren't there?
Yeah, there were six other changes, and some of these are obviously more important than others. Probably the second most important part of the change was the elimination of this little thing that was called the 1/12th rule. And it used to be if you enrolled at any time other than January 1st,
mm-hmm.
you had to prorate what your contribution was based on the number of months you were eligible during the year.
Right.
They now have removed that limitation.
Good.
And remove may be a strong term. They've now moved it to a back-end type of limitation. But if you enroll in July, stay continuously insured, you can put in the full statutory amount. So in our prior example,
is it a half year exemption convention, half year convention, or what if you put it in December?
If you put it in December and then stay continuously covered through the following December,
uh-huh,
you could put in a full family, if you had family coverage, a full family contribution this December.
For that December year.
Yep, and then you could put in another one January 1st.
Right.
So what it does is allows you to jumpstart that health savings account.
I got you. Yeah, exactly. That's very smart. Whoever, the people who pass that really are understanding how important this device is, this instrument is, and to small business owners and to self-employed people
right across
the country, and not only to small business owners but to their employees. I bet you guys are seeing a lot of employers who are buying these, who are helping their employees buy these for their employees.
Yeah, we're absolutely seeing a lot of employers that are interested in this, usually on a choice basis.
Right.
But most employers have a whole bunch of employees at very different stages in life, very different income levels, very different needs, and this provides another option to their employees.
More choice, and the new rules make it more attractive for employees to contribute, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Tell us about that.
Well, one of the things you now can do is do a one-time trustee-to-trustee transfer from an individual retirement account. So for those individuals that are looking to jumpstart that HSA, that have a well-funded or maybe have excess retirement funding, hard to believe, but there are a few people in that boat, they can actually fund it from their IRA.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we encourage anyone doing that to seek guidance from their financial planner because of the potential tax consequences of doing that. But it certainly provides more flexibility for an individual to do that.
Mm-hmm. What about can an employer contribute to an HSA? They can, can't they?
Absolutely. In fact, we encourage.
Tell us how that works.
The employer can certainly contribute to an HSA. And from an employer's perspective, a contribution to an HSA is treated no differently from a tax perspective than how they pay premiums for health care coverage.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not subject to the Federal Insurance Contribution Act, not subject to Federal Unemployment Tax Act, or the Railroad Retirement Act.
Mm-hmm.
So it's better than giving them salary.
Right.
Because it's exempt from all those taxes.
Mm-hmm. And so the employer gets to deduct it as an expense.
Sure, it's an ordinary business expense.
Deducted as an expense, it goes to the employee, not as income.
Right.
Or subject to any of those taxes, as you said, and then the employee gets to deduct it, right?
Well, if the employer funds it, the employee doesn't get the deduction.
That's right. If they only let you do once, they won't let you double dip.
Yep.
That's right. If it goes to the employee, then they just get the benefit, but the employer gets the deduction, which the employee won't mind not deducting it because they get the money.
Correct.
Yeah.
Kind of the general rule I use is there's no double dipping allowed.
Right, exactly. All right, I got time for a couple more of the points.
Okay, I'll run down real quickly, Jim, the other four, just to kind of make sure we tick them all off. There is a provision there that allows a one-time transfer from a health flexible spending account or a health reimbursement arrangement.
Right.
It sounds really attractive on the surface.
Right.
It's exceptionally complicated.
Quickly, I got a few seconds.
Okay, the other one I'd say, they're going to start releasing indexed amounts sooner. So by June 1st, so for example, we already know next year's amounts.
That's great. That's great. And what else? You got one more?
Employers that now want to make greater contributions to the HSAs of non-highly compensated employees can do so.
Mm-hmm. Getting into the weeds a little bit, folks, but the point is you got lots of choices. Check it out. Find out from your professional what you should have. Jerry Ruppiger, thanks for being here today. Good job today.
Thanks, Jim.
We'll see you next time. Got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.